Hello and welcome to the 12th and, in fact, last edition of the current series of the Heritage Langham podcast. I'm Heather Payton. In our 12 months of podcasting, we've covered everything from DNA testing, the successful search for the identity of the effigies, as well as the unsuccessful search for the remains of the owners, a reenactment group on the Carmarthenshire hilltop, our Flemish ancestors, Scottish and Irish cousins, and much, much more. And of course, they're all still available on the website. So now with the church about to reopen and the other parts of the project drawing to a close, we'll be catching up on what we've achieved and looking ahead to fun still to come and hearing some more from these people. Music from La Volta, the early music ensemble we'll get to know quite well over the next few months. One particularly impressive achievement of Heritage Langham has been the tapestry telling Langham's story in stitches, which is due to go on show for the first time in the church on December the 10th. As you may be aware, the app accompanying it is narrated as if by Mabel the Fleming, who with her husband Hugh appears in Haverford West's remarkable 13th century property documents. We're asking a lot of Mabel. There'll be Welsh and Flemish versions of the app, as well as English. So how does that work? Well, in our case, we've asked two friends of the project, Christine Verica in Belgium and Llinos Martin, a North Walian now living here in Langham, to translate and record the narration, which we then fitted to images of the tapestries, interviews and other visual material in the same way as we did with the English version voiced by Claire Phillips. Here's a bit of Llinos as our Welsh Mabel.
Felly, mae'r de la Roches yn cario ymlaen ar ei ffordd ei hunain hyd at John de la Roche. Cofiwch, dyma Mab Roberts, yr hwn sy'n cael ei gofio trwy'r ddelw yn yr eglwys.
The Welsh Mabel, otherwise known as Llinos Martin, talking there about the progress of the de la Roche family into the late 1300s. So how difficult was it to translate what was quite a colloquial script, Llinos?
It was quite difficult, really, because there's very little Welsh spoken around in this area. I generally don't speak Welsh very much, especially now I'm not in school anymore. And the kind of language used is perhaps not the kind of language we would use in a daily conversation. So it meant a lot of time using dictionaries, looking up phraseology, and checking up on what I was doing, basically.
Because a lot of it was quite colloquial, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. And obviously I'm from North Wales. So to start with, different words, different vocabulary. The intonations are different. Phrases are different. We visited Llanelli years ago. I had to speak English because North and South Wales, Welsh didn't match particularly well. When I speak to my brother in North Wales, I use a slightly different Welsh to when I'm talking to Welsh friends down here.
There's all sorts of really fascinating research about people who are multilingual or bilingual, and it seems to have maybe a physical effect on your brain.
You have to think in two languages, and it does take a little while when I go to, whether I go to visit family or friends, it takes a little while to get into the swing of speaking Welsh again. Even when I'm on the phone to my brother sometimes and get back into the swing of speaking Welsh to him.
I remember when we were recording you as Mabel, you said, well, you wouldn't actually say that in Welsh. Can you remember what some of those phrases were?
I came across one of them which says, he was the top dog. Well, you wouldn't say that in Welsh. You'd just talk about him being perhaps the head or the pennaeth, as we do in Welsh. And lots of little things like that. And you can't translate exactly word for word. You have to take the whole sentence or the whole paragraph virtually and swap it round so that it makes more sense.
We've got three Mabels, as you know. We've got an English-speaking Mabel, we've got a Flemish-speaking Mabel, and we've got you as the Welsh-speaking Mabel. Do you think that the Welsh Mabel is different in any way from how the English one would be?
I think maybe the Welsh Mabel should be fiery, very fiery. Because you know, lots of Welsh people are. They might be small in stature at times, but they are quite fiery. But on the other hand, I think they are also very, very sympathetic and very, very quiet as well.
Llinos Martin as our Welsh Mabel, small, fiery, sympathetic. Not sure about quiet. Now, we've reported at length in the podcast about the DNA part of the project. The most exciting bit was the discovery that one Langham man, Norman Roach, had markers that corresponded exactly with men called Roach who were descended from our founding father Godebert, and then finding more men in Flanders who shared these same markers. Here's a reminder, starting with Winford Jones from the production company Green Bay, who made a programme on S4C television featuring our search.
The one result that was surprising was Norman Roach's result. You found one of their living descendants. Fantastic.
Well, incredible. It makes you feel humble in a way, really, you know.
It probably goes back to the Roman era of Egypt, where this haplogroup originates. And so probably what's happened is that one of the local individuals there has migrated from southern Egypt to Italy. And the closest linkage outside of the UK are a few individuals in Italy.
Have you found any men with the same markers here in Flanders?
Yes, exactly 11.
So Norman is related to these men?
Yes, in fact, they are all descended from one common ancestor somewhere, probably early the first century AD.
Mark van den Kloot, a family kund in Vlaanderen, hunting for Flemish genes in Flanders. And you also heard Norman Roach and Peter Roach, who runs the Roach Family DNA Project from Melbourne, Australia. So Norman's DNA comes originally from Roman Egypt via Italy and Belgium to Wales and Ireland. Amazing. But let's catch up with what else we know. Liz Rawlings was in charge of our DNA project.
Well, we had a second DNA test done with Norman with family tree DNA, really because we wanted total confirmation of the results that we were given via DNA Cymru. Simply because they have a much wider database, so it meant that we could possibly track down more relatives of Norman by using a second database. And that actually happened and has proven to be very, very successful, because we have had contacts from people all over the world who have the same genetic makeup as Norman, so it's been really exciting.
And to remind people, it's a really rare genetic makeup, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's phenomenally rare.
So give me an idea of some of the people you've tracked down, because there was actually a chap from Australia that came over, wasn't there?
Yes, we had a visit from Mick and Tria Roach from Australia, and he was so excited to be here. They actually stayed in Roach Castle, which gave him an absolute joy and a lift to just be in the home of his ancestors. And then, of course, when he met up with Norman, it was amazing. And if you looked at the two guys sat next to each other, I mean, we took photographs, because there is a similarity. It was really uncanny. And we even had side shots taken because their profiles were so clear and so good. So whether or not this is their Flemish ancestry, I really don't know, but it does beg the question.
We've also come across a chap called Thomas Roach, and he was a philanthropist, wasn't he?
We're trying to bridge the gap between Norman's ancestry, local ancestry, because the family came originally from St Ishmael's, and also the Roach family that we know of. We can track them downwards from Godbert to about 1550 quite clearly. But then there's a gap. So what we're trying to do is to bridge the gap. But we have found some very interesting characters along the way during the research. And one of them is, yes, Sir Thomas Roach, who lived in Butterhill, the big manor house, Butterhill Grange in St Ishmael's. And in 1707, his will actually stated that he was leaving money for the poor children. The money actually went to churches, but they went for the poor children in Langham.
And because Norman's details are now on this huge database, an international database, Family Tree DNA, this information is going to go on coming in, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we have contacts now with the Roach family all around the world. We have Peter Roach in Melbourne, who is a geneticist himself, but he is now responsible for the Roach Lineages website. We have people who are contacting us directly through Family Tree DNA. We have a lovely family in Virginia, and he's trying to persuade his wife to come over for the medieval weekend next year, and it's only going to grow.
Liz Rawlings in charge of our DNA project. So what has Heritage Langham achieved so far? Well, it saved a medieval church building in dire need of repair, which isn't bad for a start. But what else? Pam Hunt is the project's chair.
I think this community has achieved the most amazing thing. I never genuinely believed that, A, that Heritage Lottery would give us the money in the first place. And then having got that, I wasn't absolutely certain we'd get the money from everyone else, like Cadw and Garfield Weston. But it happened. What has been quite incredible is how the community has rallied around the project. I mean, we haven't wanted for volunteers. We've asked for them and they're there. And it's been absolutely great. And people who probably have never been near the church before, people who've never done archaeology before, have come in and got themselves involved with it, which is brilliant.
We've saved the church building, which is quite an achievement when you think of its age. Just run through at a quick trot the other things we've done over this time.
Well, we did the DNA tracing on seven men. That revealed one man having a DNA link all the way back to Godbert the Fleming, who we believe founded this village. We did the archaeological dig at Great Nash, where we found pottery dating back to the middle of the 12th century, which also suggested to us that there were people living there probably as early as 1130, 1140. We've made a tapestry. And I mean, the hours that people put in on that, I haven't clocked up the hours yet, but a lot of hours were put in by a lot of people to get that tapestry delivered in the 9 months it's taken them to make it. It's just, and the history research, of course. I mean, you know, there was a lot we hadn't tracked down or hadn't. We had a rough idea of what was going on, but we didn't know the detail. And of course, Belgium revealed some more interesting facts for us.
And we identified the effigies.
And you know, it feels different now. You know, you look at an effigy and you know who it is. And when you know who it is, you feel actually a lot more comfortable about who it is. You know, if it's just someone from the de la Roche family, it's not the same. But when we know it's Robert de la Roche and his grandmother Margaret on his father's side, it's brilliant.
So what's still to come? We've done all that stuff that you mentioned there. The next thing that happens is going to be the church reopening, or rededicated and then reopening. Now that's, December the 10th. Tell me roughly what that's going to be.
Well, we're having a special reopening in a way to thank everyone who volunteered, which is going to be well over 100 people if they all decide to come. Mm. I don't know how we're going to get them all in, that we'll worry about that nearer the time. To thank them, and the UK representative of the Flemish government who works at the Belgian embassy is coming down to switch the tapestry on for us. Up until next spring, just after Easter, we'll be having invited groups coming to have a look at it. And then as of Easter in 2017, then the church will be open every day for visitors to come and see the tapestry and try out the app. I should mention, the app isn't free. Churches can't charge admission, but this has cost a lot of money to develop and deliver. It's going to cost a lot of money to keep that church open and keep it in the condition it needs to be in to make it last. So it sees its millennium. It's 832 years old at the moment. We want to keep it open for another 180 years and then it's 1,000. So what we're doing is that when you want to download the app, it'll cost you £2, and that money goes into the church account to help keep the building running.
We've got the app, of course, which goes with the tapestry, but there's also, of course, a film.
Yes, there is. It's called The Search for Little Flanders, and it's based on trying to find out who these people were. I mean, we know they were from Flanders, but what were medieval Flemish people like? And this film will set out to try and tell that part of the story. But it is also, it follows the community's efforts in trying to get to the bottom of the story of the Flemish settlement of South Pembrokeshire. And it's a very difficult story to unfold because, of course, there are only three pieces of contemporary written evidence that actually says they ever came here.
Well, the other thing we ought to talk about is the music by La Volta, and we heard a bit from them earlier on. I seem to remember you recorded them in a church hall in Pembroke.
Well, it was the Roman Catholic Church in Pembroke Dock, and it was actually a wonderful acoustic for that sort of medieval group. Although the building is Victorian, which is a bit modern to really perform in, but you can't go around too often and find medieval buildings with suitable acoustics.
OK, well, we're certainly making good use of the recordings. We're going to hear them on the film. We'll also hear them on the app, and they'll be playing at the Tapestry launch and also at the Medieval Weekend next spring, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. Should we hear a bit more of La Volta?
Yeah, why not?
Well, that was La Volta, and we'll be hearing lots more of them over the next few months. Pam, I mentioned the Medieval Weekend, which is planned for the first spring bank holiday next year. Can you just run through what we're going to do then?
Well, quite a lot. On the Saturday, the 29th of April, we are reenacting the wedding of Lady Joanna and Sir David de la Roche, who had their nuptial mass performed in St. Jerome's in 1315. And there'll be a medieval wedding breakfast for people to go to straight after the wedding reenactment. On Sunday, there will be a service. And then in the afternoon, we're having a rendering of the Mabinogion, which are the Welsh medieval tales. On the Monday, which is the big De La Roche day, we're having a medieval market, we're having reenactments, we're hopefully having even an old alehouse. The idea is to try and get De La Roches from all over the world, or descendants of the De La Roches, to come to the village of the birth of their ancestors and pay us a visit and enjoy the weekend. And it's going to be great. And there'll be another medieval banquet at the end of that day as well.
Do we get to dress up?
As much as you like.
Pam Hunt, chair of the Heritage Langham Project, so best get sewing now. That's it for now from the Heritage Langham podcast. Don't forget you can catch up with the entire year's worth on the website heritagelangham.org.uk, though that'll be changing in the new year to link straight to the Talking Tapestry. So all that remains is for me to say thank you to the Heritage Lottery Fund for making our project possible, and to you for listening. Let's bow out on La Volta.